Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, 15 lines down. The Gemara here is discussing the machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. We got to that because the Gemara said, our Mishnah that says that the midwife becomes tmeah when she touches the fetus that is inside, that's not a din d'oraita, but rather a din d'rabbanan. Because if you held like Rabbi Akiva, you would think that it's a problem, even midoraita. But the Gemara says that the Mishnah fits, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, believes that midoraita, there is no tumah here. But there is rather a gzeira d'rabbanan, that the midwife will come into contact with the fetus and become tmeah tumata meit, because she is uncertain or it's not clear where the threshold of birth is. So if she touched it before birth, she would be, according to Rabbi Shmuel, tehora. She touched it after the point of birth, she'd be tmeah tumata meit. Problem is that we don't know where that exact threshold is, because Rashi notes that the pruzdor of the woman is very long, and that means that the pruzdor from two perspectives, one is the birthing canal itself, as well as the fact that the thighs of the woman cover up the area, and so the midwife's not going to be certain about that threshold, and she might think she touched it when it was inside, when it really was outside. The woman herself doesn't have that problem because she can sense where the baby is along the process of the birth, and she has that information. She can't convey that information to the midwife because she's so involved in the birthing process that she's not in the mode of communicating. And we also know that women at that point in time, because of the rush of hormones and the trauma associated with it, actually forget what happened and where certain exact details that they forget because of the way that the brain deals with that type of trauma. For that reason, we have this gzirat chachamim, that the midwife, which comes in contact with it, is tmeah tumatameit. The Gemara wants to know, is my Rabbi Shmuel or my Rabbi Akiva? You mentioned the machloket Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. You referenced it to explain our Mishnah, but what is that machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? The Tanya, we have a braita, which is about tumatameit, which says, v'chol asher yiga al pnei asadeh, b'chalal cherev, o b'meit, o b'etzem adam, o b'kover, itma shivat yamim. So anything that comes into contact with something that is a dead body, then that person's going to be tamei, tumatameit, for 7 days. And that is al pnei asadeh, that's of an open area, an open field, b'chalal cherev, whether you do it through the sword, o b'meit, or direct contact with the body, o be'etzem adam, or a bone, o be'kover, or the burial place of the individual, all of those will generate tumat hamet. V'chol asher yiga al pnei asadeh. So al pnei asadeh, lotzi ubar b'me'isha div Rabbi Yishmael. Al pnei asadeh means it has to be an open area. That open area comes to tell you that something that's in a enclosure, an enclosed area, is not tamei. The example of that, or the what that comes to exclude, is a fetus inside of the mother that's already passed away. That fetus is not mitamei tumatameid because it's not al pnei hasadeh. Rabbi Akiva omer, the rabot golel vidofek. It comes to include these features of a burial place. So Rashi says over here, he does it many places in Shas, says the golel is kisui ha'aron shomeit, is the top of the aron of the mate. And the dofek is daf shenotim v'tzido. Those are the walls of the coffin. So it's the cover and the walls of the coffin. That's what's called the golel v'dofek. You can see Tosfot over here says, mifurash b'kerakama t'ktubot. He sends you over to ktubot. And every time this happens in Shas, Tosfot always comments to Rabbeinu Tam, who thinks that's incorrect, because the pasuk says al pnei hasadeh. And you be merabe it from something that's al pnei hasadeh. What Rashi is describing is something that goes into the ground. It's not al pnei hasadeh, so why would you include a golel and tofek from pnei hasadeh when this is something that is not al pnei hasadeh? So rather, the Rabbeinu Tam describes it as being the matzeva that sits on top of the kever, as well as the two slabs of stone that hold up the matzeva on the side. So the golel is the matzeva, and the tofek is that which holds up the matzeva that sits on top of the kever. But that's above ground rather than in the ground. The more likely explanation or understanding of what a golel and dofek is based on what we see here today, and they probably were not exposed to these types of kvarim because you don't really have them in Europe. But here, many of the kvarim were kuchim that were done into the bedrock, into the stone, And after you quarry into the stone and you create the burial cave and the kuchim, the catacombs that are inside of it, you have to then close it up when you're finished. The way they used to close it up is that they would make a huge stone wheel that you could roll away from the door and roll into the door. That's the golel. The golel is the thing that covers the doorway into the cave and then opens up the doorway. The dofek is the stone that stops it from rolling. When you put a wheel there, how do you lock it in place? You put some stone underneath it that wedges in there that stops it from rolling. That's probably what the golel and dofek is. And if you go to burial plots, they have them in Yerushalayim, up in Beit Shan as well. Some of these places, you can actually still see the wheels that were right in front of the caves that they used to roll in front of the door and away from the door. The reason to have that is, aside from just the privacy and nice thing to not allow the kever to be open, but they did it in addition to protect against animals from coming in there, and maybe even grave robbers that used to go into these places. They used to put these very heavy stones in front that rolled. That maybe is what the reference of Golel and Dofek is over here. So this is the machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel that we referenced before. According to Rabbi Kiva, a fetus that is in utero that has passed away already is able to be mitamei to matamate. So if you came into contact with that, you'd be tamei to matamate midoraita. Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, says the pasuk v'chol she'egal p'nei hasadeh excludes a fetus that is in utero, and therefore, if you come into contact with that which is in utero, you're not tamei. You're not tamei to matamate. And that's what the Gemara said over here. Our Mishnah says that there's a gzera derabanan, that the midwife that comes into contact with that fetus that has passed away, that is still in utero, is tamei to matameit midrabanan. Because when the baby is born, then it will convey tuma midoraita, even according to Rabbi Shmuel. And as we discussed yesterday, Tosafot says that it is a gzera takatuv, that birth allows that tuma now to have impact, because it's not just if the baby sticks an arm out or something comes out that you come to me, it needs you load. It has to actually be born. So birth is that threshold. And it crosses over that threshold. Then even according to Rabbi Shmuel, you have here an entity that's separating away from its mother. And in separating away from its mother, now you have a fetus that's passed away, and that will convey to matamate, even according to Rabbi Shmuel. And so when it's internal, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's tahor. When it's born, it's tamei. The gzeira is when the midwife puts her hands in to go and touches the baby when it's already passed away, she is me'atumatameit because of the fear that she won't get it right and won't know when that threshold of birth is. And so we make her tmea when she comes into contact with that baby that will be a stillborn. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel golel v'dofek. How does he learn out golel v'dofek if he doesn't get it from the psukim? Hilchata gmirala. Talocha l'moshe misinai for Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabbi Akiva, there's no halacha l'moshe misinai. It's learned from the pasuk midoraita. Rabbi Akiva, ubar v'meisha, tamei midoraita. And Rabbi Akiva, with Rabbi Shmuel's miut, doesn't subscribe to it. And therefore he believes that a fetus in utero that is passed away is mitamei tuma midoraita. And if the midwife touched it, she would be tamei tuma tamei midoraita. Minalei, how does he know that? Because as Rashi notes, the Pashtura Pasuk of the Al Pnei HaSadeh, even if it's not extraneous, favors Rabbi Shmuel's interpretation. So Rabbi Kiva needs some sort of drasha to undermine what would have been the Pashtura Pasuk over here. Amar Rav Hoshaya, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Kol Nogea B'meit, Bin Nefesh HaAdam, Asher Yamut, Lo Yitchatad Mishkan Hashem Timei, V'Nechotah Nefesh Ha'im Yisrael, Ki Mei Nidalo Zorak Alav, Tameyeh Otumato Bo. So the play is on Kol Nogea B'meit, B'nefesh. B'nefesh means inside of another entity. Ezu Meit Shib'nefesh Shel Adam. What is something that passed away that's internal to a person? Havimer Zeubar Shib'mei Yisha. That is a fetus inside a woman. And here you have a pasuk indicating that it has a din of Tumata Meit. Rabbi Shmuel, what does he do with that pasuk? Ami Ba'ile Nirvi Dam Haba Minameit Shimitama. That comes to teach you that a revered dam that leaves a mate, that it is able to be mitamei, tumat amet, tumat hadam. Because ne'amar, anugea benet, benefesh hadam. Someone who touches a mate, benefesh hadam, the soul of the individual. Ezu nefesh shel adam shemitamei. What is the soul of the individual that can convey tuma? Rabbi Omer, zo revered dam. That is a revered dam. Rashi over here says the reason being that, Chayei ha'adam tluim bo. Vidalog is the life force of the individual. Shbekachu mitkayim. That's what keeps a person alive. So according to Rashi, but it's said in the Gemara in a number of places, Vita Dam is the life force of the individual. And therefore, if you have Vita Dam that leaves or leeches from a mate, that Vita Dam will be Mitameh Kim mate, because that is B'nefesh Adam. That can convey Tuma. The other way to formulate it is in the Mishnayot and Olot, the Rashi Mishnas suggests that the baby or the fetus, when it is first created and born, contains a revi'it Adam. And so that's the beginning of the Nefesh Ha'adam. So for that reason, he's reading it as, konogev emeit ben Nefesh Adam. If you touch the mate here is representative by Nefesh Adam, and the Nefesh Adam is revi'it Adam. So when you come into contact with revi'it Adam, you are tamei mate. For Rabbi Akiva le tamei, and Rabbi Akiva's le shitato, damar af revi'it Adam, abba mishne meitim, mitamei bo'el. That even if you have a revi'it adam that is combined, is generated from the combination of blood from two different meitim, that still is mitameh. Revi'it Shmuel requires that it be nefesh adam. It has to be enough dam from a single mate that it represents the nefesh ha'adam in that one mate. So that will be mitameh mate. The Mishnayot in Oholot describe or deal with what parts of the adam are mitameh b'maga and masa, and what parts are mitameh b'ohel. And how much of the corpse or the mate do you need in order to have tum'ah tamate be relevant? So one of those is revi'at adam, is one of those items that makes you tamate tum'ah tamate, b'magav masal b'ohel. But that's only true, according to Rabbi Shmuel, if it comes from a single mate. You have revi'at adam from a single mate. Rabbi Kiva believes that it can even come from two mateim, as long as you get to a revi'at adam in combination, then that's also mitameh b'ohel. So he doesn't subscribe to this, because he doesn't need it to be just a single nefesh adam. It could even be nafshot adam. It could even be from multiple people, and therefore it wouldn't represent the nefesh adam, because it's not one individual's nefesh. It's a combination of two different people, so they add up to a nefesh adam. The Tanya, Rabbi Kiva, Omer, Minayin, Revi'at Adam, Abba'a, Mishnei Meitim, Shimitama, Ba'ohel. How do I know that if you get a Revi'at Adam that comes from two Meitim, that it's able to be mitameh ba'osh, ne'mar, v'akol nafshot meit, lo yavo, that you're not allowed to come into contact, b'nafshot meit. This is one of the examples that's brought at the beginning of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, for the Eim Lemikra, Eim Lemisoret, that we focus on the way that it's written, and that we focus on the way that it's pronounced. Over here, it's written, nafshot, without a vav in it, but it's pronounced, nafshot, with a vav in it in plural. And so, depending on whether you think Eim LeMikra and Mesoret will give you a different outcome over here. The way that you read it, which is Nafshot is plural, that's the way Rabbi Akiva is seeing the Pasuk, and therefore he's saying, I'll call Nafshot mate. Even if you have multiple Nifashot that create the mate, Lo Yavo, you're not allowed to come into contact with that. Shtei Nifashot, B'Shir Echad. That there's two Nifashot contributing to the single Shi'ur of mate, and so therefore multiple Meitim can contribute towards the Revi'at Adam, that is mitamei tumat hamate. And that is the machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel that we leaned on to explain our Mishnah and say, don't think that our Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Akiva. Our Mishnah is even according to Rabbi Yishmael. And even though Rabbi Shmuel doesn't think that there's tumat hamate for an ubar that passed away inside the mother, nevertheless, midrabanan, there is a gzeira that the midwife becomes tmeah, and that's what our Mishnah is referring to. And in that way, we uphold what we saw before about Maga Beit Hasdarim and Tuma Blua, that they do not convey Tuma, according to Rabbi Yishmael. And therefore, and technically, the midwife is really Tehora, but the Gzera Derabanan makes her Tmei'ah. All right, next Mishnah. Be'ema Amekasha Leled. Again, an animal having difficulty birthing. Botzi'u Baret Yado. And then the fetus sticks its arm out. V'chatcha. And then they cut it off. V'achar kach shechat the timo. And then afterwards they shech the mother. Habasar tahor. The basar that is in the mother is tahor, meaning that the only problem you might have had was the limb that left. The limb that left is basar v'sadeh treifat lo tochelo. You can't eat it. So that limb that left is either Avram in a thigh, or possibly nevela, depending on the status of the fetus, is whether the fetus is alive or the fetus has passed away. That arm has one of those two problems with it. that arm, as an avail or aver min achai, can convey tuma. But over here, it was cut off before the transformation of the item that was inside, which is the remainder of the ubar. The ubar itself, when it's alive, quote unquote, isn't mikabel tuma. So as long as it's alive, then there's no tuma for that it can accept. So even when you detach the arm from that behema, even if it came into contact with it, it's not a problem because tumat nevela can only be conveyed to an animal when it's dead, when it's a carcass, not when it's alive. So now, alive can be manifest in two ways. One possibility is that the fetus is actually alive. Tosafot gives even a bigger chiddush. He says, the ubar shebifnim afilu meit chashiv kechai. The ubar inside, even if it's passed away already, it is considered to be alive because it is an extension of the mother still at that point. If you shech the mother and there's a fetus that's dead inside, the fetus is nitar ayireh d'shchita of the mother. So given that, the fetus is seen as an extension of the mother, even if it's passed away already, it's alive as far as tuma and tara are concerned. So either it's literally alive or it's figuratively alive because it's an extension of the mother. And therefore, when you cut away this limb, it does not make the basar, the ubar that's inside, tameh. On the other hand, shechata imo, if he shechs the mother, va'achar kachatka, and then only afterwards you cut off this arm that was out, then a basar magan nevela. Then the basar that is internal, meaning the remainder of the ubar, becomes something that is magan nevela. Came into contact with a nevela, divrei Rabbi Meir. Again, we quoted this back on Daf Samachet, we quoted this Mishnah, with regards to machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to what the status of the ubar is. Rabbi Meir believes that the contact with this arm after you've shechted the mother makes it tamei tumat maga nevela. And Rashi explains that as basar ubar maga aver minachai. The basar of the ubar came into contact with an aver minachai, which is mitamei kinevela. Has tumat nevela, as we're going to see much later in the Masechta. Inami, Rashi offers a second interpretation. Im yatzav ubar meit nevela gemura. Havia aver meachar shelo tarato shchitat imo. Since the mother shchita was not successful at transforming this aver into something that either is edible or something that is not a nevela, therefore when the ubar exits, this arm becomes a nevela. The Rashi says that the arm is a nevela for one of two reasons. Either because it's aver min achai, and aver min achai has a status of tumat nevela, or because the shchita of the mother and the ubar exited when it's already mate. The ubar itself is not a nevela because it was nitar yedei the shchita of the mother, except for that arm that left before. In either of those scenarios, what's happened is the ubar itself is now a ochel. It has now become food. It was nitar yedei the shchita of the mother, and now you can consume it, you can eat it. It needs no other preparation to be eaten. So the ubar itself is now ochel. The arm is restricted because it's basar b'sadeh treifalo tochelu. That arm is either aver min achai, or that arm is tamei tumat nevela. One of those two, and both of those have a din of tumat nevela. And therefore the contact with the ubar itself makes it maga nevela. It's touching a nevela. So you have food that is touching a nevela. Food that touches a nevela becomes maga nevela. And so that's why it's tamei tumat maga nevela. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. V'chachamim omrim, maga trefa shkuta. That it doesn't have a din of nevela, it has a din of trefa. What the chachamim say is that the shchita of the mother is successful at transforming this arm from something that would be a nevela or aver min achai into a trefa. It may not be eaten. It's basar b'sadeh trefa lo tochelu. So the shchita is not successful in making it mutar b'achila, but it is successful at removing the shame nevela from it. And therefore the arm status is that of a trefa. A trefa doesn't have tuma, actually. That's the difference between a trefa and a nevela, is that there is no tuma. But there is tuma midrabanan in kodoshim, and that it will have, because you have now a trefa that's in contact with the ubar, which is ochel. And so it will convey the tuma midrabanan for kodoshim. Ma matzino b'trefa sheshchitata mitaharata. Just like by a treifa, when you do a shchita on a treifa, it's mitaheret. It removes the tumat nevela from it. Af shchitat behema titaheret aver. So too, the shchita of the mother should be mitaher, should remove the tumat nevela from this limb. Even though it can't successfully make it kasher le'achila, it can't successfully remove the tumah. Similar to the way shechita works by treifa. The shechita of a treifa will never make it okay to eat this animal. It's a treifa. But nevertheless, it still is successful at removing the tumah from the animal. So the same way that it works by treifa, it should work over here as well. Amar lahem Rabbi Meir, lo, it's not a good comparison. Im tihara shechita treifa, ota, davar shibigufa. When it comes to the shechita of a treifa, that could be mitaharit because it's a part and parcel of the animal itself. Meaning that the shechita is on this animal, and the shechita is mitaher this animal. Titaher to eiver, davar she'eno gufa. How could it be here that the shechita is successful at taking care of something that is not her body? The shechita of the mother take care of the eiver of the ubar. Now the truth is that the ubar is part and parcel of the mother, because the shechita of the mother is mitaher the animal. But in this instance where the arm was extended out of the mother before the shechita, then it's basar b'sadeh treifa lo tuchelu, that in essence severs it away from the mother. Or in essence, the Gemara is going to get to this point at some point, which is shechita osin nipul, which is that when you do shechita, it's as if that item separated away from the mother, and therefore it's not going to be able to be mitaher this item. That's what Rabbi Meir believes. Chamim obviously believes shechitaino osin nipul. It doesn't make it separate away. And that has nafkamino, both for the ability to be mitaheret, as whether it's considered separated so that it can be mitamei, the item that is left behind. So minayin l'treifa sheshechitata mitaharata. How do you know when you do shechita on the treifa, it's mitaheret midei nevela? Tzmeya asura b'achila. A non-kosher animal, you're not allowed to eat. Av treifa asura b'achila. Treifa also, you're not allowed to eat. Those are both items that are restricted from being eaten. Ma be'imat tzmeya ein shechitata mitaharata. By a non-kosher animal, if you shech the animal, it won't help you in this case, because it says, hanogeya bahem. When you touch them, lavi be'imat tzmeya, shalo titarena shechitata. When it says, hanogeya bahem, itma, so that it says, when you come into contact with them, you're tamei, it doesn't qualify the statement. It means, anytime you come into contact with a non-kosher animal, you will be tamei tumat nevela. It doesn't matter if it died naturally, it doesn't matter if you killed it through shechita, it's not going to matter. So, av treifa lo titarena shechita. The same thing should be true of a treifa. Meaning, if a treifa is a surba achila, and if it died naturally, it would be tamei tumat nevela, then why should shechita have any bearing over here? Mar says, look, im amart bebei matmeya, shalo aita la shata kosher, it's very different. A bein tmeya was never, ever ra'oi la achila. It was always a non-kosher animal, and so therefore, shechita doesn't help it. Tomar b'treifa shaita la shata kosher, that's not true by a treifa. A treifa at one point was kosher la achila, but then it became a treifa and made it asur. But there was a point in time where it could have been okay for achila. Given that, maybe it's a different din than that of a behemat tmeya. So, tulacha masha veta. So, Rabbi Meir says back to the chachamim, take what you brought, take your proof back. Alright, shenolda treifa min habeten minayin. What are you going to do with a congenital treifa? Congenital treifa never had a shata kosher. It was never ever ra'ui l'achila. So then how can you say that's differentiated or should be different than a behemat tmeya? Lo. When it comes to a behemat tmeya, there is nothing in its species that will ever be able to be eaten. When it comes to an animal that's a treifa, that animal in particular may be restricted, but its mean, its species is mutar ba'achila. And therefore, shechita will be efficacious at removing the tuma from it. So then, the Mishnah ends off with, Ben Shmona Achai, if a fetus is born, but not reaching full term, but rather after 8 months, Ein Shechitato Mitaharato. If you shech the animal, it won't help you out. Because there's no Shechita for that type of animal at all. I'll have to discuss this, but this is based on a view in Chazal that both humans and animals that don't reach full term, when their full term is 9 months, at 7 months and 9 months, they are viable entities. At 8 months, they are not viable entities. And therefore, this Tana believes that a Shmona that was born Chai was a live birth. So therefore, its mother's Shechita does not help it. And it itself can't get shkita because it's like what a quote unquote the Gemara calls in Shabbat an evan. It's like a stone. It doesn't have viability at the 8 months. And given that it doesn't have viability, shkita is not going to help you over here because you can't check something that's quote unquote dead. You can only check something that's alive. Since it's not alive, you can't check it. There are dissenting opinions amongst the Tanaim that even at 8 months, Monachai, if you checked it, it will be successful at making it both tahor and ra'oi la'achila. So now, the Mishnah goes through a transition, which is interesting. The Mishnah moves from the Makok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim into an issue of Treifa versus Behemat Me'ah, or basically Treifa in general. Is this just a non sequitur? Just happens to be we move from one to the other because we're talking about Treifa, so there's a thematic connection and that's it? Or is this more fundamental? So the Rambam and the Perusha Mishnayot suggests that the reason that the Mishnah parlayed into this is that it's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is trying to get the Chachamim to say, since it had a Shata Kosher, that's why the Shechita helps it. So if you have items that didn't have a Shata Kosher, then the Shechita shouldn't help it. And that's his point here. You have a Behemah that was in utero that didn't have a Shata Kosher. That's because prior to the Shechita of the mother, the arm was extended out. And since it extended out before the mother was ever shechted, that arm or that thing that extended out never had a Shata Kosher. Since it didn't have a Shata Kosher, then the Shechita should not be efficacious at removing that Tumah from the arm. The Chachamim's response is, that's not the only reasoning behind Treifa, because Treifa, even congenital Treifa, is able to be Nitar Ayudei Shechita, because within its species it has a Shechita and it can't be eaten. And the same is true here of the arm that was extended out. It itself cannot be eaten. It was never a Shata Kosher, but nevertheless, in its species, there is a Shata Kosher for such an animal, and that's the Chachamim's argument over here, that the Shechita is successful at being Mitayer the Behema, even though the Gemara in the upcoming Dapim will give more detail about what exactly is this Machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The second thing is, the Mishnah never addresses, it takes it for granted, and never it says, Minan the Treifa, Shechita ta Mitarata. How do you know that a Treifa, Shechita helps it? It never answers that question. It just says, oh, you would have thought otherwise because of Behemat Me'ah. Now, Rashi brings from the Torah Kohanim that the source for the fact that a Behemat Me'ah remains Tamei after Shechita is because of the Pasuk of Nogea Behem, that when you come into contact with them, no matter what, you are Tamei, irrespective of how they were killed. But it never tells you why a Treifa is Tehora. It likely is, and Rashi seems to be leaning in this direction, which is the Pasuk that speaks about Shechita in Devarim and Parshat Re'eh says, Pirchakim Kamakom, that's the limo that we know about zvicha, about shchita. Mibicharcha umitzoncha, asher natan Hashem lecha, kasher tziviticha. Those are the lochot, the Moshe Mitzinai, for dissecting the animal and what makes it kasher, not kasher. V'chalta bisharecha, v'chol avat nafshecha. So the mizavachta, mibicharcha umitzoncha, bicharcha umitzoncha is an inclusive term that says, anything that is bakar and tzon. If you can fit into the category of bakar and tzon, then zavakta, zvicha, shkita will have impact. And that's basically what the Mishnah is saying, is that being in the category of bakar and tzon is enough to allow you to become tahor through shkita. And that's why even a congenital treifa will be successfully rid of its tumat, nevela, through shkita, because all of the requirement there is bakar and tzon. And this is a bakar, and this is a tzon, even though this particular item itself can't be eaten and never had a Shata Kosher, nevertheless, it's within the category of Bakar and Tzon, where Shkita does make an impact, and therefore Shkita will make an impact on them. All right, now the Gemara says about Rabbi Meir's position, Amai, why is it that the contact between the arm that went out beforehand and the Ubar makes it Tamei? Tumat Beta Starim Hi. This is something, again, we discussed in yesterday's daf, that when you have contact between items where the contact is not visible, that means the point of contact is not visible, then that is not a type of negi'ah, touching, that generates a conveyance of tumah. And over here, the arm of the ubar is attached to the body of the ubar. So why is it that the tumah of that arm is able to be conveyed into the ubar itself, even if you say that it's ochel the ubar, because it's nitar yedei the shechita of the mother, whether it's alive or even dead, according to the Baal Tosafot. Nevertheless, even if it's ochel, the contact between this arm and the ubar is an area that's not visible, and that shumat beit hasterim lo mitamyo. And when you have contact in that way, it does not convey tumah. Gemara says, Lema Rabbi Meir l'tamei. Maybe Rabbi Meir is the shitato that thinks that tumat beit hasterim does convey tumat. It's not. Rabbi Mishnah in Kelim. Shlosha al shlosha. This is in the male conjugation. So shlosha al shlosha means 3 by 3 tfachim. Shenechlak. If it is torn in half, tahor min hamidras. It removes the tumat hamidras from it. Aval tamei magam midras. But it is tamei for the contact with a midras. Now, here, the Gemara we have here is Divrei Rabbi Meir v'Tanya. Rabbi Tiv Eger takes out the Divrei Rabbi Meir over here because the reason that it's Rabbi Meir is because it's a Stam Mishnah, not necessarily because it says Divrei Rabbi Meir. And then you have Rabbi Yossi and no v'Tanya because Rabbi Yossi is actually found in the Mishnah itself. It's likely there is a Braita like that, but the truth is there's the Mishnah in Kelim actually has this in it. So if you just drop the Divrei Rabbi Meir in the Tanya, it's the same as the Mishnah in Kelim. We'll read it, but just note that it's not necessarily a part of it because they're quoting a Mishnah. So you can drop the words Divrei Rabbi Meir and Vitanya. You have over here a minimum shiur for something to be kabel tumat midras. Tumat midras is tuma that is conveyed by certain high levels of tuma, including azab, azaba, anida, whereby they can convey tuma not just by contact, and not just by masa, but even through what's called yeshiva, shchiva, if they lay on something, they sit on something, v'chiva, they ride on something, they're able to convey their tuma, even if they're not in direct contact with the item. So if they sit on something, even though there's a divider between them and the item that they are sitting on that they're going to make tamei, they still convey tuma to that item, which is called tumat midras. The minimum shiur for tumat midras to be conveyed is 3 by 3 tfachim, because that's a minimum size for you to sit on it. You need something that is the size of which you could sit on in order for it to be mekabel tumat midras. So if a zava, nida, sat on such a piece of clothing or cloth, then they would convey tuma to it. They are in avatuma. Tumat midras is so powerful that even though the person who's walking on it is an avatuma, the item that received the tuma remains an avatuma. And so therefore it's a much higher level of tumah than rather than direct contact of the individual with the item, because that item then would drop down a level of tumah, become a rishon the tumah. So tumat midras is powerful in two ways. One is that you don't need to be in direct contact with the item, and number two is the tumah that's conveyed remains at the same level as the level of tumah of the individual that is doing the midras to this object. Now, if you then rip that in half, you've now taken it below the shi'ur, that is the minimum shiur for tumat midras. So you've now removed the tumat midras from this item. The minimum shiur is 3 by 3 tfachim, just like when you break a kli cheres, or you break a kli, it gets rid of the tumat that's there. So it's over here, when you rip this in half, you've gotten rid of the tumat that's there. But, as Rabbi Meir says over here, it is tahor from the midras, but it's still tamei maga midras. It still has tumat of the contact of the midras. So now that when you rip up the cloth, you've gotten rid of the tamei midras because it's no longer ra'ui the midras, but you haven't gotten rid of the maga midras because for contact or maga, even a much smaller size piece of clothing, we'll see in a second, can accept tuma. So the higher level of tuma went away, the lower level of tuma is still there. And then Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, "B'chezo ezo midras nagazeh." Where did this ever come into contact with a midras? It was to make tumat midras from the sitting on it, but where's the maga midras? Ela shimnaga bo zav, sheitamei maga zav. If the zav touched it, then it'll be tamei tumat maga zav. But if the zav never touched it, or never came into contact with it, then it won't have a tumat maga midras. So the difference between Rabbi Yossi's view and Rabbi Meir's view is, how did the maga happen over here? Rabbi Meir says the item touched itself. So if it was tamei tumat midras, when you rip it up, the item touched itself, and so it's tamei tumat maga midras because it was tamei midras. Rabbi Yossi says you can't have that. There's no tumat there because that was tumat beit hasterim. The contact between the two halves over here were something that was attached and not visible, and therefore there was no maga midras, and when you tear it in half, then there's no maga midras, it's just midras, and midras is gone. The only way it can be tamei tumat maga midras is if the zav not only sat on it, but he also touched it. Now, how exactly it became tamei tumat maga midras, Rashi brings two possibilities. Shim nagabo zav biraglo arum, that he walked on it barefoot, shidaras alav. So he walked on it. That was the Tumat Midras. But it was barefoot at the time, and therefore he came to direct contact with it. Oh, the Kharshat Arasalav, or after he walked on it, not in direct contact, and he then came into contact with it afterwards. Not at the same time, but they first of all sat on it without coming into contact with it, and then afterwards they touched it. So now, when you rip up the item, you get rid of the higher level of Tumah, which is the Tumah Midras, but the Magah, the contact, the Midras that comes from the contact is still there. Before this time, it wasn't meaningful, because there was a higher level of Tumah, which was Tumah Midras, that governed. But now that that's gone, because you ripped it up, now the Tumah Magah will come to the forefront. Tosafot heavily favors saying that it's the first of the two, and not the second, based on the Gemara in Menachot. The Gemara in Menachot says, if you have a higher level of Tumah, then the lower levels of Tumah are not just waiting in the background to come to the forefront when the higher level Tumah disappears. They don't make any headway. They don't actually affect the item at all. Once you're higher level of Tumah, lower levels of Tumah have no impact on the item. So that's a machloket in the Gemara in Menachot. So based on that machloket, Tosafot favors saying that happened bevat achat, that it happened simultaneously, which is that the person sat and came into contact with the site at the same time. So when that happens, you have Tumat Midras, and you have Tumat Magah Midras. Both of them happened simultaneously. Now, even if you invoke that principle of Savaba Tumah Chamura, which is that the item already has this Tumah Chamura, and therefore the Tumat Akal has no impact, so Tosafot says from a Gemara further on, it seems like that you can have Tumat Ochlim be manifest even on something that has Tumat Ever Minachai. And the Gemara over there says it's according to Rabbi Meir that says that there is Magah Beit Astarim can convey Tumah. But how is it that you have Tumah Kal that is manifest on something that Tumah Chamura? So Tosafot at first tries to speculate that Tumat Ochlim maybe has a Tzad Chumra to it that doesn't have by Ever Minachai. And then he favors saying, like the Rabbeinu Shimshon, that there's a qualification of this principle, and that is, but the Rabbi Shimshon says, the Savala Tumah lo shayach with the Varsha Tumah ba migufo. That Savala Tumah is not a principle that we invoke when the Tumah emanates from the item itself. V'chayel Shapir afilu kala lachamur. And therefore over there, even something of a lighter form can be manifest on something with a higher level of Tumah. So over here, when you're dealing with Tumat Midras and Magad Midras, neither of those are Tumah that emanates from itself. And therefore, if you were to have the Midras first and then the Magah Midras afterwards, the Magah Midras would not be able to have impact on something that's already to make Tumat Midras. On the other hand, in a case where it's Eber Minachai, and then it's going to devolve down to something that's Tumat Ochlim, over there you can have the Kal be manifest even when there is the Chamur. That's because the Chamur is a Tumah, not that was passed to this item, but rather is exuded by this item. It emanates from this item. It's inherent Tumah. And when you have something that is inherent Tumah, then lower forms of Tumah can't be manifest. So gam by Nevela, by Eber Minachai, Tumat Ochlim can't be manifest in them, even though they are Kal, meaning Tumat Eber Minachai. So La Vit Mara La, don't we have said about that? Amar Ula, Lo Shna El Shlosha Al Shlosha Shenechlak. That's only true if you're talking about a 3x3 tefachim item that was ripped in half. Aval shalosh, al shalosh, haba'ot mi beged gadol. If you have something that's 3x3 etzba'ot, that comes from a much larger piece of clothing or cloth, bishad frishatan mi avihen. At the moment that they are separating away from their larger counterpart, meaning the core item, mi kablot tumah mi avihen. They get tumah at that moment in time. So when you have something that is exactly 3x3 tefachim, as soon as you start to rip it, it's now gone below the threshold of 3x3 tefachim, and there's nothing left that there that's tamei, tumat midras, to convey it to the cloth that remains. Then if you're dealing with a beged that's much bigger, and you're tearing away a piece from that beged, now the minimum amount of cloth or clothing to have tumah is 3x3 etzbaot. As Rashi notes over here in other places, that's because a poor person can use that as a patch for his clothing. So that's the minimum amount of cloth that would still be mikabel tumah. So here, when you tear away that amount from a much larger piece of clothing or much piece of cloth, then that item can be mikabel tumah. And it's mikabel tumah because even after you tear it away, the original beged is still tamei tumat midras. Since the original beged is tamei tumat midras, it came into contact with the smaller beged. That is because Bishat Prishatan, when you're separating it away from the original Beged, then at that point in time, there's incidental contact between the smaller piece that you're taking away and the bigger piece that's still Tameh. And that's what makes it Tameh. So it's only when the piece is exactly 3x3 tzvachim, then as soon as you start to rip it, it's below the threshold, then there's no residual Tumah to contact the other item. On the other hand, by a much larger Beged, where it in itself has Tumah, it can convey that Tumah to the smaller piece, as long as the smaller piece has the minimum shiur of 3x3 etzbot. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Yossi, when you're dealing with a bigger item and a smaller piece coming away from it, then the bigger item can convey Tumah to the smaller piece because the bigger item still has Tumah embedded in it. Rabbi Yossi only argues in the case where it's exactly 3x3 tefachim. So if that's the case, it doesn't have to be just Rabbi Meir l'shitato. Even Rabbi Yossi would agree in that case, and that's what we're saying here. Hanami. And over here in our case, Prishatan me'efer, mikabel tumah me'efer. At the moment you sever the limb away from the body of the animal, at that moment, while you're cutting it away, or you're severing it away, there will be incidental contact from the efer to the body, and that's when the tumah will be conveyed. But that means that according to this view of Ula, the only time that the Ubar would become Tameh is when you actually cut away the limb from that Ubar. At the time that you cut it away, that will generate the Tumah because there will be incidental contact that's no longer Tumah Gav Beit HaSterim, and that's what will generate the Tumah for the residual Ubar that is there. So Rabbi Meir has two pieces to his Shita. One piece is that there is Tumat Nevela on this Eber, which the Chamim disagree with. But even after that, you have to have a secondary stage, which is how is that Tumat conveyed to the Ubar? So at first we tried to suggest, maybe this is Rabbi Meir l'shitato, that Magah Beit HaSterim is considered to be a type of contact that's enough to convey Tumat. Like the 3x3 Tzvachim Beged that touched itself when you're ripping it apart and gets Magah Midras, so too over here, when the Eber is attached to the Ubar, it'll convey Tumat. Where it says, you don't have to say that. It doesn't have to be only Rabbi Meir l'shitato. Even if you don't hold like Rabbi Meir, and it's not Magah Beit HaSterim over here, it's more akin to the case of the larger Peged where you're separating a smaller piece away, where there will be incidental contact with the bigger piece, and that's where the Tumah will be conveyed. Similar over here, when you're severing the Eber away from the Ubar, at that time there will be incidental contact that's not Magah Beit HaSterim, and that's what will convey the Tumah over here. Now the Baal HaTosafot note that other places in Shas, we see that you are able to separate things away without it conveying Tumah. So Tosafot makes a distinction, says, Yesh lamar debayi l'ukmei ap benitaz b'chol kukol, to l'makabal Tumah me'avien, b'shat prisha me'avien. That depends on how you're cutting it away. If you cut it away with a very fast and powerful slice, then it's true that the item that is Tameh will not convey Tumah to the other item, because you're severing it in such a way that there won't be incidental contact. It's only when you're doing it in a slower or less powerful cut, then in that case, as you're cutting through and moving it around, there will be incidental contact. That's not Magah Beit HaSterim. Or it goes with that it's a case where you use a very big knife, where the big knife creates or presents a separation between what you're cutting and what remains behind. So therefore, there's going to be no incidental contact between them because the knife is so big. And that's how Tosfot differentiates between the other places in Shas, where it seems you can't separate it away without having Tumah, versus what we're saying over here. Ravina offers a different way to explain why the Tumah is conveyed over here, and it is Beged lav dechaticha koi, Ubar dechaticha koi. When it comes to a Beged's natural state is to be unified. It's to be all together. On the other hand, when it comes to the Aver of the Ubar, that is Ome dechaticha. That's made to be cut off. Now, it's not true in general that it's made to be cut off, but in this situation, it's made to be cut off because you can't eat that Eber. You have to sever that Eber in order to eat the remainder of the Ubar. So therefore, it's Omeid Achtoch. V'chol Omeid Achtoch, Techatuch Tomi. Anything that is standing to be cut is as if it was cut already. And therefore, if it's cut already, then it's no longer Magah Beit HaSterim. It's as if it's already separated away. And they are touching each other. If they're touching each other, the Tumah is conveyed. Kiman, ki Rabbi Meir. That's like Rabbi Meir, the Shitato. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Mikvot. Ko yadota kelim, shein arukot. If you have a handle to a kli, that's too long for the kli. That means in the future, batid l'katzitzan, in the future you're going to cut them down to be the right size. Then matbil ad makom mida. According to Rabbi Meir, all you have to do is be tovelet up to the point in place where you're going to cut it off. You don't have to submerge the entire kli with the handle in there. You just submerge it until that point where you're going to slice it off. V'chamim omim achiat bilet kulo. According to the Chachamim, you have to put the entire kli into the mikveh in order for it to be tahor, even the part of the handle that you intend to cut off in the future. Our Mishnah in Mikvot doesn't have Divrei Rabbi Meir, and also doesn't have a Chachamim Omrim, but rather the Tanakama is Stam, and then it says Rabbi Yehuda Omer. The Gemara's assumption is that the Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and therefore either it was added into the Gemara, Divrei Rabbi Meir, and then Chachamim Omrim being the position of Rabbi Yehuda, or there you have some Breita that actually gives attribution to Rabbi Meir and Chachamim rather than a Stam Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda. But you can see the Sefer Shas takes it out, indicating that it is really because it's a Stam Mishnah that we think that it's Rabbi Meir. According to that view of the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda, that you submerge the whole kli, don't you have a problem with chatzitza? Because you have to submerge the whole kli, but you intend to cut off the piece in the end. If that's the case, then the extraneous piece of handle over there should be a chatzitza for where the true handle is going to begin. Out of the waters, get into that area, which is eventually going to be the end of the handle. So it's fine, you can submerge the whole kli, but why does that help you in this situation if there's still a chatzitza over there? So Tosafot claims that this is Yesh Lamar, Dari Biyadot Kulim Asum Kein Chuliot, Godan Shal Shalot Shel Barzel, Hasuyim B'Taba'ot. It's where the handle is made up of component parts, like chains of metal, whereby there is no chatzitza, and where there is the ability for the water to get into that area. And that's why there's no problem of chatzitza over here. Though other Rishonim give other answers to this, including the Rosh Mishantz, who suggests that you're not chosesh for a chatzitza that is in a place of a beit hasdarim, for that Makom Balua doesn't have a din of a chatzitza, or the Raivud suggests it's a miut makom, she'enu makpid, since it's a small place that you're not makpid on, because you actually still want the handle there at this time, till you cut off that extra piece, and therefore it's not considered to be a chatzitza for the kli in the tevilah. So you see, Rabbi Meir's shita is that kol omed lachtoch, anything you plan on cutting off, we look at it as if it was cut off already, and therefore you only have to put it into the mikveh up to that point. And we look at it as if the mikveh water's got around the entirety of the kli and the handle, even though it's still attached right now. So similarly, with magab beit hasdarim, it won't convey tuma. That's only true when the item is intended to stay together over time. But an item that is going to be cut off, or should be cut off, in those cases, then it's no longer magab beit hasdarim, because we look at it as if it's already severed. So that means that according to Rav Ina's view over here, even before you cut it off, the tuma is conveyed. According to the way Ula's explained it, you'd have to actually cut it off in order for the tuma to be conveyed. Because it's the incidental contact when you're cutting it off that conveys the tuma from the Aver to the Ubar. Over here, Ravina says even before you cut it off, the tuma is conveyed because it's omeid lachtoch. It's waiting to be cut. And since it's waiting to be cut, we look at it as if it's cut. And therefore, if it's cut, then their contact is visible contact and not invisible contact. Mar says, afilu teimer rabbonon. Doesn't it just have to be according to the Shita Rabbi Meir? It can even be according to the Rabbonin. Chibure ochlim command mifritei dami. When it comes to ochel that's attached, we look at it as if it's detached already. Unigei lahadodi, and therefore they are touching each other. Or in essence, when it comes to food, food's natural state is to be broken up. And even the Chachamim will agree in this case. Not like the handle of the pot or the pan, where you're going to cut it off in the future, but it's a solid item. Since it's a solid item, until you cut it, it's considered to be a part and parcel of the utensil. Whereas by food, its natural state is to break down. And since its natural state is to break down or to be separated, to broken into pieces, even the Chachamim agree there that we look at it as if it's already broken into pieces. And as Rashi notes over here, that anywhere we say in Shas that Ravina believes, Hibure Ochlin Kamanda Mifrite Damu, that anytime you say something food that is attached, we look at it as if it's in component parts or broken down already, Mehocha. This comes from here. That's what the Gemara is indicating to us, that Ravina would say this even in the position of the Rabbonon, that because Chiburei Ochlem is Kemifrit Odami. It looks as if it's already separated. Now Tosafot qualifies this statement that Chiburei Ochlem Kemam Mifrit Odami, that still is only in a case where it's Omei Lechtoch, where it's something that eventually will be separated away. like in our case over here, that it's omeid katzeitz, because the aver is asur and the remainder is mutar. Had it been that everything was asur, then we wouldn't invoke this principle. And that's what he says about Gabri aver min achai, da kol asur. In a case of aver min achai, regular case of aver min achai, everything is asur, vein omeid katzeitz. And then you don't have to separate away. Lo amina kemat de mikrit dami. We don't say that it's as if it's broken up into pieces because of the fact that everything is asur. There's no reason to sever it. There's no reason to cut it up into pieces. It's only when a portion of it is mutar and a portion is asur do we say then that it's kemat de mikrit dami. It's as if it's broken apart. Now Gemara says bishlam al ula. According to Ula's explanation of Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, haynu nitani chatcha. That's why the Mishnah specifies that for the tumah to be conveyed, it has to be cut. It says, Hosea Ubarat Yado, Shachada Dimo, if the animal stuck out its hand and then you shechted the mother, Ve'achar Kachatcha, and then afterwards you cut it, then in the Basar is Magad Nevela. According to Ula, as we noted before, you have to cut it in order for the Tumah to be conveyed, because it's the incidental contact during the cutting that actually conveys the Tumah. So that it makes sense why the word Chatcha was used in the Mishnah. Ela Ravina, my Chatcha. But for Ravina, why do you have to cut it off? Even if you don't cut it off, the tumah is conveyed because of the fact that we deem it as if it was cut. And so you don't actually have to cut it for the tumah to be conveyed. So then why does the Mishnah mention chotcha? Where it says, I did the tana reisha chotcha, tami nami sefer chotcha. In the reisha, there tzavka has to be cut off. Because in the reisha, it was cut off before the shkita of the mother. There it's important that it be cut off first. Because if it's cut off first and then you shef the mother, there's no contact between them and there's no conveyance of tumah. Because while they were in contact with each other, either the ubar was still alive or it was still a part of the mother, and therefore there was no transference of tumah because it never became an ochel while it was still attached. There, chatcha is dafka. So then in the seifa, when it wrote the case, it also mentions chatcha, even though for Ravina it's not necessary for the tumah to be conveyed. It still mentioned chotcha because it's parallel in structure to the reisha, but not because it's dafka. It's lav dafka chotcha. So for Ula, the chotcha of the Mishnah is dafka. For Ravina, the chotcha of the Mishnah, and the Sefer at least, is lav dafka, just paralleling the structure of the chotcha of the reisha. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Gimel, Amud Aleph.